It's time for the Biblical Prophecy Program with your host, Dr. Alan Kirshner of Eschatos Ministries.
Hey, welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Biblical Prophecy Program. Last time we looked at different beliefs of the nine beliefs of premillennialism. And today we're going to look at seven beliefs of postmillennialism. So when I was working on my dissertation on Revelation 19 and 20, of course, you read quite a bit of the literature on other interpretations. And so I just immersed myself for years in amillennial, postmill, premillennial literature. And, you know, there's one thing you learn, of course, is that not even premillennialists, it doesn't matter what view you hold to, typically, you know, you're going to have different interpretations even within the same camp. So when I say that these are beliefs, of course, different interpreters will take issues or different nuances on each of these beliefs. But for the most part, they do represent the view. So here today with postmillennialism, and again, there's going to be some outliers. You know, someone's going to write me and say, hey, wait a minute, so-and-so postmill guy doesn't believe this. Or I understand that. This is basically what they believe overall or have believed overall. There are some aspects in postmillennial theology of recent, just in the recent decade that is changing a bit, but this is pretty much traditional postmillennial belief system. So postmillennialism, this is another historical temporal millennial interpretation. And when I say historical temporal view, there's non-temporal views of the millennium. They don't believe that they believe the millennium is more of a metaphor than an actual event happening in like a period of time happening in history. But you have those views that do believe that the millennium occurs in history are postmillennialism, amill, and premill. Of course, we have debates on when that begins and the nature of the millennium. So there are a variety of postmillennial views out there. Again, some that overlap with each other. You have what's called conservative postmillennialism, modern postmillennialism, contemporary postmillennialism, and you have reconstructionism. You know, just to throw out some of these interpreters, of course, you have, you know, that have been noted in the literature, Kenneth Gentry, David Chilton, let's see here, you have John Jefferson Davis. Interesting, he was my ethics professor at Gordon-Conwell Theological Seminary. Keith Matheson. So those are a few of the noted post-mill guys out there. So number one is post-millennialism is characterized as the expectation that the fulfillment of the millennium will be in the future. Which may not necessarily be a literal thousand-year period. So here's where they may be, some of them would take issue with that because, well, let me put it this way. Traditional postmillennialism has believed that the millennium will occur in the future because a lot of them didn't, you know, they just looked out in the world and say, obviously this is not this wonderful kingdom of righteousness that we see every day. So they would still hold that it's still in the future. Of course, you have newer postmillennialists who are actually, again, I would just take huge issue with this. They would say that, no, this is the, we are living the millennium. It is the age of righteousness. And so they're kind of redefining traditional postmillennialism. So And I want to note this here. Number two, however, like amillennialism, postmillennialism construes the parousia happening after the millennium, while premillennialism establishes the parousia before the millennium kingdom begins. Let me note that again. So they would share that, you know, that with amillennialists, that postmillennialism construes the parousia happening, it's after the millennium. Okay, that's where they would share a view with amillennialism, because premillennialism establishes the parousia before the millennial kingdom begins. It is maintained by postmillennialism that the portrayal of Christ in chapter 19, verse 11 through 21, does not depict the future parousia. Rather, that portrayal of Christ represents the judgment on Israel and or, you know, the beginning of the new age when the gospel is spread to the ends of the earth. That's key to understanding the in other words, a lot of them would, and they're not on the same page, but a lot of them would say that, more traditional postmillennialists would say that the battle in Revelation chapter 19, you know, that's still in the future, but they wouldn't see it as the parousia, okay? Some postmillennialists, more maybe today, would argue that it's, you know, it occurred in AD 70. And, or at some point, the whole point here is that what's happening, this battle in Revelation 19 is not the second coming of Christ. Okay. In relationship to the millennial period. Okay. In other words, it's not the second coming of Christ in terms of the resurrection. And again, this is where, you know, you have to differentiate between full preterists who believe that the resurrection already happened, because some would argue, yeah, it is the second coming. I'm talking more evangelical postmillennialists that would still hold out for a resurrection. So they definitely would not see the resurrection in Revelation, or they would not see that anybody has been resurrected by the point of the battle in Revelation 19. Again, you know, a whole program could be devoted to each of these beliefs to, you know, this is just an overview. I'm not trying to describe give a comprehensive description of each point here. All right, and this is where premillennialist number three here, premillennialist and postmillennialist would agree. We would agree that, so Revelation chapter 19, verse 11 through 21 occurs sequentially before the binding of Satan. This is why post-mill and pre-mill are sequential interpretations, unlike amill, because by the time with amillennialists, they have Revelation 19 in the future, that is the battle, and then they have the binding of Satan retrojected back, you know, to the first coming of Christ. Post-mills agree with pre-mill that no, it's a sequence, that the battle in Revelation 19 is the cause of Satan's binding, and completely agree with that. Their problem, though, of course, is they don't view the binding of Satan occurring in the future at Christ's second parousia. They would say that the binding of Satan will occur at some point in church history before the second coming. Okay, number four. The future parousia is the climax of human history with the resurrection of all the dead and the final judgment. So there is no biblical warrant to construe an ensuing temporary messianic reign. Now, in this respect, this is similar to amillennialism, which views the parousia culminating the millennial age. The difference is that Amillennialism locates the millennial age having begun at Christ's first coming, while postmillennialism has its beginning at some undetermined point during the inter-advent age. That probably needs qualification because I think there's more postmillennialists that are arguing that, no, the binding of Satan has occurred at Christ's first coming. I really begin to wonder whether that should be construed as a completely different view, though, because that's not what traditionally postmillennialism has taught. They have taught that, because they're not, it's hard-pressed to argue that the millennium, the age of righteousness, the physicalness is happening on the earth right now. The way that all millennialists get around that, they'll just say, well, the millennium, the kingdom of God is in your hearts or something along those lines. So that's key. Number four there, let me repeat that again. The future parousia is the climax of human history and with the resurrection of the dead, all the dead in the final judgment. So they would say that there's no reason then to have a messianic reign. Number five, before the parousia, the millennium period, and by the way, this fifth point is what a lot of people know when they think of postmillennialism, they think of this point here, that the period is going to be characterized by a Christianized transformation of the world, living righteously according to God's will, brought about by the efforts of the church in the preaching of the gospel. And so this is, and it's the location of the martyred saints who will reign in heaven. That's the reigning in heaven. Number 13. Now, some postmillennialists view the saints in chapter 20, verses 4 through 6, as the church reigning on the earth. Okay. Again, you're not all interpreters are going to that share the same designator are going to share the same views or nuances. Number six, like premillennialism, postmillennialism interprets the millennium occurring after the beast is defeated. Okay, so when the beast is defeated, Revelation chapter 19. Okay, they would then construe that is when the millennium begins. Of course, postmillennialists would not view the beast being defeated at the future parousia, but rather either has already been defeated or will at some point in church history be defeated, and then you're going to have this millennium, and then you're going to have Jesus returning. Number seven. Postmillennialism, in contrast to premillennialism and amillennialism, interprets the period just before the parousia optimistically. Okay, so obviously it's optimistically because they think that the millennial period is the time in which the world is Christianized. Okay, so in summary, the sequential interpretation is found in two main, though distinctive, frameworks, premillennialism and postmillennialism. So premill and postmill share the belief that Revelation, the battle in Revelation 19 and the binding of Satan, these are sequential views, and that the chapter break, there shouldn't be any chapter break there because it's a continuous context between these two chapters, where all millennialists they will rupture the context there with the artificial chapter break. Okay, guys, I hope that's been helpful, and we'll see you next time. Thank you.